Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme! Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event!
Alrighty, we're back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, and by my side today is the G-Man, Alan Gitlin. How's it going, Alan?
All right, Ian, how are you doing? Thank you for having me on, first of all.
I'm doing good, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right.
What made you want to become a comedian? What were some of the things that, started you off?
When I was younger, I did a little acting when I was around 20 years old, and it used to take us like 2 hours to eat dinner because I'd be cracking up and making jokes. And, of course, a lot of times I ended up with handprints on my face when I was younger because my mother was a disciplinarian. And I've always been a good storyteller. And so I got married around 26, 27, got divorced around 43, 44, always liked George Carlin kind of. So I saw an ad for Caroline's Comedy School in New York, and I said, let me try it. It was one day a week, 2 hours. I think it was 10 weeks for $400, I believe. And I tried it, and I liked it. And, they can't really say you're not funny. They try to critique your writing and get you used to stage. Of course, if you're not on stage all the time, you never get used to stage time, you know. So that really got me into it, and I've done some comedy bits and in New York City. I've done some in New Jersey, and I recently moved down to Florida, and I haven't done anything down here yet, but I will probably, I've done some nice acting gigs and a few, got the comedy went into acting somehow too also. So, it's kind of like intertwined kind of, I guess, with me, but
yeah,
they compare me.
It's all about being on a stage and performing, so I can definitely understand where those go hand in hand.
And I'm compared to Seinfeld because what they call me an observation comedian. I pay attention to things people don't pay attention to, such as I actually drive a Ford Explorer, and Ford used to have a commercial that said the Ford Explorer is the best-selling SUV on the planet. Well, do we sell on other planets? Not that I know of, you know what I mean? Or, recently down here, actually, I went to a restaurant that I happened to like, and the urinal was like, really, it was one urinal and it was 6 inches off the ground. So I made up a joke about, like, is that for Johnny Watt Holmes or a midget? Which one? Because you're probably going to pee on your shoes,
That's right.
These are things that people just walk in and out, don't pay attention to. Or, for example, before I moved down here, I flew down here twice to see my girlfriend. That's why I came down here. And I don't know what airport you fly out of, but I'm sure all the airports are the same. In Newark Airport in New Jersey, I ordered dinner, and they give me a plastic knife with a regular fork. Now, they give you a plastic knife because TSA says you can't have a knife. But you can't do damage with a fork. I could stick somebody in the jugular with that fork. I could poke their eyes out. But I'm allowed to have a fork, but not a knife. I mean, really? I mean, who thought of this genius move, you know? But I just thought it was kind of funny. When I got it, I was just like, really? Somebody, you know, what genius thought of this move, you know? So I pick up on things that people don't pay attention to, such as when I lived in New Jersey, there was a cemetery near my house and that had a sign that said open house on Saturday and Sunday. So I made up a joke about it. I want to die when it's not open, you know? So stuff like that I pick up on, crazy stuff, you know? And I've done some nice acting bits. I've done a few kind of funny things, some good stuff, though. You know, I got some nice stories. I did a thing for A&E with Joan London and Bob Smith for Investigative Reporter. And it was one of the first things that really, the first acting things I really did. And Joan London stands up. If they do this one take about 45 times, they just couldn't get it right. And she stands up and she says, you know, you extras are great. Us professionals suck. I thought that was so cool, you know. First of all, she's a very pretty lady, very nice lady. She was very nice to everybody also. And then I did a commercial for WWE Stalker 2 and XFO. And XFO was around, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And that was shot up in Rockland County, New York. It was a very funny story. They took 14 of us up in a van to play football all day. We had to be in New York City at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I lived about 45 minutes outside the city, which a lot of people do. And so we get there, and they go, you have to sign this waiver. And we're like, what do you mean you've got to sign this waiver? Well, Vince McMahon from WWE had his lawyers draw up a 35-page waiver that you needed a lawyer to understand. And the gist of it was that he didn't want to be sued in case you got hurt. However, if you didn't sign the waiver, they were going to drive you back into New York City, which was an hour away, and you weren't going to be in a commercial. So it was kind of like you didn't have a choice, really, you know. But matter of fact, I don't know if you're a wrestling fan or not, but China the Wrestler, and I believe it was X-Pac or Six-Pac, whatever they call them.
Oh, yeah.
She was supposed to be there, and they were in a drunken stupor, the two of them, and she got fired. They both got fired, actually, for that. But she got fired because she was supposed to be there in that commercial. And when Vince McMahon says she was supposed to be somewhere, you better be there because he builds your character up, and he expects you to be. That's part of your contract. So they had a dub. Kane, which is a big red machine, and later on into the commercial, which was shown on Channel 9 in New York, which is a local station. I can't tell you how many times. And we got paid $2,000 for that day, a 12-hour day, and we waited 10 months for that check because Vince McMahon wouldn't sign off on the checks. He likes to take money in. He doesn't like to give it out. But
as much money as he has.
Oh, he's a billionaire, the guy. Come on. You know, his wife ran for governor of Connecticut and spent $400,000 of her own money or something, or $4 million, I don't know, some kind of stupid amount of money on a campaign to become mayor, and she didn't become governor. So, and it was all her money. So really, I mean, how much money do you have here, buddy, you know? So it was just kind of funny. But I have fun with everything I do, you know. I meet a lot of younger people on sets, and I tell them, listen, you know what, make some money, have some fun. You never know who you're going to meet along the way. In the acting and the comedy business, sometimes it's who you know and not necessarily what you know. You know, it's a strange business. I've been around it for a long time now, about 12, 13 years. I try to help people out. I have friends. I've been in many independent movies, and I still keep in touch with a lot of the people that I was in movies in. You know, I have a friend of mine in Arizona. We were in three independents together. I have a friend of mine down in Miami who we were in one together. A couple of years ago, we still keep in contact. A couple other guys I keep in contact with every once in a while. I say hello, what's going on, how you doing? So, you know, I make friends in the business. Networking is an important position that you're in, you know. So that's just how I am, and that's who I am pretty much. I don't know what else you want to know about me. I'm an open book, kind of.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I've always been a big wrestling fan, and I had the opportunity to do it for a few years, and it was a lot of great fun, and got to meet Kane a couple times, and he was really nice, down-to-earth guy. So.
Cool guy, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was kind of where I was going, so it's like you read my mind.
Really? Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah, they dubbed him in later on, and, Vince McMahon wasn't too happy, but he had to put somebody in that commercial. You know, and like I said, he was trying to build the XFL. He was partnered with Stalker 2 at the time, that's like an energy pill or whatever they were taking at the time. And, of course, he was promoting WWE also. So was a combination of three. Matter of fact, the XFL cheerleaders were there in their cheerleading uniforms. They were freezing their butts off because it was about 10 degrees that day. And they were all freezing there. Of course, us guys liked it, you know, because, you know, things, certain things expanded.
Right.
We had fun, though. It was a lot of fun, though. I mean, it was a fun time, though. You know, it was a fun day. You know, it was just kind of crazy that you know, what went on, though. But other than that, I don't know what else you want to know. I'm pretty much an open book. You can reach anything you want to see about me, basically, on my website, www.theg-man.net, or The G-Man Cometh on Facebook. Those are two places you can see most of my stuff. And what I'm going to do, I'm in the midst of, actually, I wrote a script with another guy, an original idea, and hopefully a trailer will be made very shortly after January. And then we're going to try and sell it to Netflix or Amazon or Hulu. And it's a really interesting thing. It's not the zombies. It's not Marvel. It's not the throne thing. It's an original idea about a detective living now who uses no technology. He's a cross between Columbo and James Bond. And he's Columbo because he figures stuff out by his gut. And he's James Bond because he's betting everything in sight, including the secretary. As a matter of fact, his secretary has knee pads in her drawer. And when you can't find her, you have to look under his desk. I'll say no more. he drives the first car he ever owns. He lives in the same house he grew up in. He eats breakfast pretty much the same place every day. He wants to live back in the 80s, the early 80s, before technology took over. When he goes on a case, he always carries a beeper. And when his beeper goes off, he asks you if he can use your cell phone. And then he has to call whoever he's calling three or four times because they don't recognize the name. You know, like if I had your cell phone, I was trying to call one of my friends. They're not answering. You know what I'm saying? Right. They're like, I don't know who this is. So after somebody keeps calling, like, you know, minute after minute, every 30 seconds, they pick it up. You know, he carries a Polaroid Instamatic because he doesn't have a cell phone to take pictures with. So he has to have a Kodak Instamatic camera that comes out, you know, where the film comes out, like, you know, 30 seconds later, 10 seconds later, you know. So he's really old school, but he's also some new school stuff too. You know, he lives with his childhood sweetheart who he went to high school with, and she knows all about his side stuff, and sometimes she actually partakes in it, kind of modern that way. But there's a lot of twists and turns to it. So right now it's called Adam Goldsmith's Private Eye. However, when I sell it to Amazon or Hulu or Netflix, I mean, they may change the name of it. I like to stay on as a consultant because there's a lot more stuff I want to bring out in it that I couldn't bring out in the first 8 episodes. But got a lot of good stuff going on, you know. So
very cool.
Yep. And that's my big project right now. And matter of fact, I just got a script from a friend of ours, Steve. A friend of his is doing a small movie in L.A., and they want me to play a bit part. And matter of fact, they just sent me the script yesterday. I have to print it out and look at it. And then something I did about 6 years ago, I just got an email for yesterday. I have to sign a release for some film that I did six years ago is going to come out with King Kong Bundy in it. How do you like that? King Kong Bundy was in it. Interesting. Another wrestling guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the guy sent me an email. He said, "Oh, you probably forgot about my film." I didn't forget about it, you know. I got to find a release for that so they can distribute that film out there. So it's going to come out in the movie somewhere. So that's all good stuff going on. So I don't know what else you'd like to know. You can ask me any question you like, Ian.
I was always kind of curious for comedians. What's kind of the hardest part about being a comedian? I mean, I know you guys always got to be on, and it seems like a lot of comedians deal with depression and stuff. What's some of the stuff?
You know what? I don't put an act on all the time. You know, some comedians are always, you know, on an act, you know. I find the hardest thing to be on stage. That's, if you're not on stage all the time, you know, that's the hardest thing. Now, I haven't been on stage now for about 3-4 years. I have a lot of stuff written, and I may go on stage very shortly. I just hooked up with a guy in Pittsburgh, even though I'm in Florida. We might do a two-man act, a black and white act, where he's going to be Joe White and I'm going to be Bob Black. And that in itself is funny, you know. Because two-man comedy teams, there aren't anymore, you know, and that's something of the past. And it is funny because you can play off each other, you know.
Oh, definitely.
So I just contacted the gentleman last week. After the first of the year, we're going to try and get together and see if we can do something. His name is Kevin Williams. He's out of Pittsburgh. But like I said, he's a black gentleman. I'm white. So I decided he's going to be Joe White and I'm going to be Bob Black. And, you know, that right there is kind of funny.
Yeah, role reversal.
Yeah, and it's going to all be about, you know, what black people do on certain holidays, what white people do on holidays, and play off each other a little bit, like stereotype a little bit, though, that's all, you know, which is kind of funny, you know. Everyday life is funny, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You see things every day that are just, you know, funny, you know. Like today, we went out and we were doing some errands, and we took my girlfriend's daughter with us, who's in her 40s, and we see this guy. She went to the doctor, and we're waiting in the car, and this guy comes out in a plaid shorts, green plaid shorts, and a blue plaid shirt, and they were nowhere near matching. Like, did you get dressed in the dark or what, pal? Because it was, like, totally out of whack, you know? You see so many things that people wear. It's just like, are you kidding me? Are you nuts? You know, you go outside like this? I mean, you wonder what these people are thinking, you know?
Yes,
or
I was
like,
saying, you got to think, did they look in the mirror before they left the house? Like,
right, right. Well, I have this thing. I have to watch it because when I lived in New York, I used to go to New York City a lot. And when I see somebody with a screwed up haircut, I used to walk up to them and say, listen, let me ask you a question. Where did you get your haircut? And they'd say, why? I said, well, I just want to know. And they tell me, like, Joe's Barbershop. And they say, why? I go, because I don't want to go there. You know, if he screwed up your hair, I don't want my hair screwed up like that. You know, so you got to be careful, though. Some people, most people laugh. Some people get mad, but most people laugh at it. You know, you're joking. They know you're joking. But, you know, nowadays, unfortunately, with the anger of the society, you have to be very careful, you know.
Well, there was one more question I wanted to ask you since we discussed everything else. What was it like? What was it like working on The Bounty Hunter, the really hilarious movie with Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler?
Well, here's the thing. This is a funny, very funny story. That was shot in Monmouth Park. Part of it was shot in Monmouth Park in New Jersey, Long Branch, New Jersey. And there were 500 extras. They shot it on a day when the track wasn't open. And I actually sat two rows behind Jennifer Aniston. And Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler went out to lunch. And when she came back, she had like a line like, quit chasing me or you're never going to catch me. It took them 60 takes to do that scene. She couldn't remember her lines. I don't know if they got drunk during lunchtime or they went to a motel or something, man, because I knew her lines better than she did. I was sitting two rows behind her. So, I don't know what went on during lunchtime, but something went on. You know, but it was a fun shoot, though. All shoots are fun if you make them that way, you know. I make them that way. Everybody knows me by the end of the day. I have business cards I pass out, which I think is acting 101, basically. That's your calling card. You know, hopefully somebody remember you and say, hey, you know what? Remember that guy who made us laugh on that set? Or remember that guy who came up with us, gave us that card? He's right for this part that we have, you know. So that's my thing. Networking, 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 networking. That's my thing, you know. Because you never know who
Absolutely.
You're talking to or who they know. As a matter of fact, it's funny because my girlfriend down here has a friend whose brother just married the person in charge of Warner Brothers Short Stories. Now, he was here for Halloween. His sister told him that I had a script, and he made sure that before she left for the wedding in California that he got a copy of an overview of my whole project about my script. And he's going to give it to his partner. So that's real nice of the guy, you know. But you never know,
yeah.
You know. You never know who you're talking to, you know. You never know who they know, you know. So my card is given out to a lot of people, you know. I'm not shy about my card. I'm not shy when it comes to my card or my, you know, what I do, you know.
Yeah, you made a great point. Networking is important in anything, you know. Podcasting, it's great. You talk to one person, you're like, oh, yeah, you might be interested in talking to this person. And you never know
right.
what door is going to get opened.
That's correct. You never know. That's why you have to network. Everything I do, I talk to people all the time. My mother said I would talk to the wall if it would talk back to me. Of course, she was like the same way. So, you know, I was a late bloomer, though. I was very quiet in high school. if anybody would tell me that I would become a comedian in my 40s, I would never have believed it. I was very introverted when I was a kid. I was very, not shy, I just wasn't a talker, and I just took things in. And then as I got out of high school and I started in the working world, I started working in New York, the kind of, you know, I grew up in the suburbs, so I was kind of sheltered a little bit. I knew stuff went on, but then when I got to the city, I saw it, you know. And then little by little, my personality came out. And then I'm semi-retired, but I was a salesman for the last 30 years on the road. So you got to talk. You have no choice, you know. And a lot of times I would start off, if I was doing a cold call, and somebody would say, can I help you? I said, no, two psychiatrists put me out. I put two psychiatrists out of work. Now, if they laughed, I knew I had a shot. If they went, huh? I went, oh, boy, I'm not getting too far. You know. So it's just, you know, it's just my way of getting my personality out there, you know. And I was in two professions, and I made a lot of friends. I never screwed anybody over. I made a lot of good relationships. I still have them now. I can call anybody up from down from New Jersey, even though I'm in outside Orlando now, and talk to them like it was yesterday, you know. One industry I hadn't been in 20 years, and if anybody's still around that was there 20 years ago, I could just walk in and say, how you doing? How's your mother, your brother, your uncle, anybody who was in the store at the time when I used to call on them, you know. And not too many people can say that, you know. My last profession was in the car business. I wasn't a car salesman, but I was around the business for 25 years. And my ex-son-in-law, we went to buy a car, and we went on the road up in New Jersey where it is, it's car dealer after one after another. And we walk into one dealership, and I know like eight people. We walk into the next one, I owe like six people, then five people, then eight people, another one. And then finally we get to a guy who I'm really friendly with, and he says, I got a car for you. Don't worry about it. Boom. And we got a car within a half hour, you know. And he couldn't believe how many people I knew, you know. But that's how I am with everybody, you know. Because the guy is a salesman today doesn't mean he's not going to be a sales manager down the road or something like that, you know, down the road, or he's going to be somewhere else. So I made friends with a lot of people. A lot of people in New Jersey know me. As a matter of fact, I have 12 dealers that I buy cars for down in Florida and have them shipped up to New Jersey. 12 guys that trust me. One guy has easily $5 million, $6 million worth of inventory, all exotic cars. And he trusts me to buy cars for him down here because he knows I won't screw him over, you know. And that's saying something, you know.
So yeah, you're right. Not a lot of people can say that. That's great.
Well, you know what? I've never screwed anybody over. I don't try to. I'm not in it for a short term. It's a long-term thing. And that's why how you make friends, and that's how you make relationships. And that, you know, that gets you people. You know, I tell everybody in New Jersey, when I was in New Jersey, don't buy a car without me. I knew everybody in four or five counties of New Jersey out of 13. And if you buy a car without me, I don't want to know what you paid because you got screwed over. Because I'm taking you to the owner or the general manager or somebody really high up in the organization. And if you rather go to his regular salesman, that's up to you, you know. You know, I know how to work a deal. I know how to lease the cars, you know. I drove for Lyft, and people were in Jersey, and people would tell me, I got some funny stories about that, too. Oh, my God. Some Lyft stories that are very funny, extremely funny. I'll tell you one right now that just came to mind as I was saying that. One of the last things I did in Jersey before I came down to Orlando was to take a guy to rehab. And the guy's about 35 years old, and his father puts him in the car, and he says, you know, the guy's in bad shape. You're taking him to rehab, and the rehab's about 40 miles away from where I am. But no problem with me because I'm getting paid for Lyft. I don't care. And we're in the car, and the guy's telling me he's an athlete in one of the local high schools when he was younger, and he's going to rehab. This is rehab number six for him. And I'm saying to myself, you're 35 years old, rehab number six. That's not a good thing. But anyway, so we're talking, and he's telling me he's got records in one of the local high schools, and he won a golf tournament the day before. He's a scratch golfer, and he got so drunk that his father said, that's it, I'm sending you back to rehab. And so we're talking on the way down, and we're almost to where we got to go, and he says to me, you're going to stop and get me a bottle of gin. I go, excuse me? He goes, yeah, I want a bottle of gin. I said, you're going to rehab. What, are you crazy? And he goes, no, I want to stop and get a bottle of gin. So I said, okay, I'll stop, but I'm not buying it for you. You want it, you buy it for yourself. So he goes into this liquor store, and he buys a pint of gin, and he just half of it's down in like 30 seconds. He's got half the guzzle down. And we go to rehab, and we pull up, and the rehab lady says, "What's your name?" He says, "I'm not telling you my name." So the lady says, "Listen, we paid for the ride. We paid for the lift ride, and we can't check you in if you don't tell us who you are." And he insisted on not telling her. And she says to me, don't go anywhere because you may be taking him back to his father." And he's telling her, "Oh, my father won't take me back until I go through rehab." So I stay in there, and finally he goes in with her and gives her her name. And she comes out and she says, "You know, he blew 3.0 on the breathalyzer. And at 4.0, we take him to the hospital. He's like emergency care." So I said, "Listen, honey, no offense. He's short. He's got half a bottle of gin. I said, when that gin gets in the system, he'll blow 4.0. He'll be going to the hospital. Don't worry. I mean, you can't make this up. I mean, what is wrong with this guy, you know? Rehab number 6, you know? That's one of the funny stories I couldn't believe it. I really just couldn't believe it. That the guy wanted his bottle of gin and guzzled down, half of it down in like 30 seconds, not even, like 10 seconds. He had half of it gone, you know. Just,
that's insane.
I guess he was, apparently, you know. But anyway, that's one of the funny stories from this. I have a lot more, you know. And I've been divorced for about 23 years. And I used to do some internet dating, and I got some funny, funny stories about internet dating. I'll just tell you one real quick. I meet this lady at Fridays because I meet her by her house because she wants to be safe. And we talk, and everything's nice. "I like you. You're a nice guy. You're exactly what I'm looking for. We're going back and forth. I say, "You're a nice lady. I'd like to see you again." And she tells me her dog is having surgery the next day. So I said, "I hope your dog makes out okay." You know, I'm a dog lover, so I'm an animal lover, so... The next morning, I text her. I said, "Hey, how you doing? Had a great time last night. Hope your dog does well, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again." Well, I get a text about 9 o'clock in the morning. About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a text from her saying, "I can't go out with you anymore." So I said, "Well, why not?" She says, "Well, you're too concerned about my dog." Well, apparently something else was going on there because most women would say, "Hey, this guy's really compassionate. You know, he's worried about my dog. He doesn't really know me." But apparently there's something else going on in her life. I don't know what it was. But that's one of my funny stories from internet dating. But I got plenty more. Take my word for it. I started writing them down. I had so many.
That's crazy.
I was keeping a journal after a while, you know. But now I'm fine because I got my girlfriend who I know for 45 years. And we reconnected about 9 months ago on Facebook, and now I'm down here living with her. So,
well, very cool, Alan.
Yeah, it's a real cool story. We went out when I was 18. She was 16. I grew up with her and her family, and she chased me, and I wasn't ready for a commitment then. And we reconnected 45 years later. So,
that's very awesome. Well, we are just about out of time, Alan.
Yep.
Thank you so very much
for joining me. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Anytime you want to have me on, I can tell you a lot of stories about internet dating and about Lyft. You can have me on again somewhere down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Alan. Have a great Christmas.
All right. And they can check me out on www.theg-man.net.
All righty, Alan. Thanks again.
Thank
have a great night.
It. All
no
right.
Problem.
Thank you, too. Have a nice holiday, man. Thank you.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
All right, if you just happened to join us a few minutes ago and you missed the opening or some of the interview, you can go back in about 15 minutes, check out the archive, download it, and listen to the full interview with the G-Man, Alan Gitlin. I think this is going to be the last episode of 2018. We've had some stellar guests. I did 3 conventions this year, made a lot of great friends, saw a lot of great people, and went to some great places as well. So thanks to everybody who was really nice and joined me this year. Like I said, we had some real doozies. I can't think of how many shows we did this year, but thanks to everybody for all of them. They were all great times. We will see you in 2019. Hope everybody has a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you, as always, for listening. Have a great night.